All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
Yep.
All right, what's good? Welcome to another episode of Wheel Wednesday, where we get together every Wednesday to hang out and talk about things that are marginally important. With me is I'm Scott from Koenig. With me is Nick, also from Koenig, and we're here.
What's up, guys?
I'm done keeping track of quarantine.
Scott.
Yeah, I'm done keeping back of. I'm done keeping track of quarantine days. We're done.
Quarantine days.
Yeah, it's over. It's over. So
let's just say there's been a lot of them.
Yeah, we're on to a few. So today we're taking a slight break, a diversion, I think, from the regular wheel entire exclusively talk, and we're talking about a fun subject that we were having kind of a car conversation about earlier in the week, and that is five cars for under $5,000 that you can get that would be good to turn into first time, you know, road race type cars, right?
We're doing road race.
Well, you know, like track events. Because I think drifting is
okay.
Drifting. So if we like take drifting into account, I think there's a whole other set of cars that I think are almost a given, and I think that's we don't need to do that. So let's go the direction that we were talking about, which is the whole get on, like, you know, just to get out there and start doing some autocross days, some track event days, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right. So
yeah, one of the cars I picked applies to both.
Okay. Well, all right, so we'll do this. I have five in my head that I think are right up there with some of the best ones. Now, if you at home are if you are at home have other vehicles that we don't pick in this whole thing, and granted Nick and I may have some overlap, but for the most part we each have five cars that we're going to be saying here. So if you have another car that you think would make this list, throw it down below. Explain why, though. Don't just throw in your car. Explain why that should be it. And before we get into this, if you wouldn't mind, throwing us a thumbs up and subscribing down below. All right. So let's get on to this thing. So do you want to go first? You want to give me your first car? No order, by the way. So, like, these aren't best to worst or worst to best. They're just five.
So, I kind of didn't really do my homework.
You should just know these. As a car person, you should just know these cars.
Well, all right. So, here's my thing. I don't know. I'm not super into the whole time attack road racing.
But if you were going to go autocrossing.
Stuff like that, I'm more into... You already know what car I would bring if I go autocross.
All right, but you got five, Nick. Five. You can put it on your list.
Well, not for under $5,000.
Just, all right, listen.
Some of the ones in my head, I can't get under
$5,000. Well, then this is the whole point of the exercise, Nick. You got to pick five. Let's go. All right. Do you want to go? Are you going first? Let's go.
I feel so terribly on the spot. But obviously, my first choice, and anybody that knows me already knows where I'm going with this, a Miata.
Okay.
Because, first of all, 50-50 weight distribution is freaking awesome. The handling is great, and I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of people tracking these cars. Like, I've seen them on the track. When I went to Global Time Attack, they actually had an event on the other side of things. Like, it was 90% Miatas, and, like, a couple of, like, other little... project road cars like S2000, stuff like that. But I think the Miata is a really good platform for that. One, because you can buy them for like $1,000 if you really know where to look. At the most, $2,000, and there's a lot of performance stuff that you can do, still keeping it under $5,000. So that's the first car I would choose. I don't really have a very good second one.
Okay.
As far as like all the other stuff goes, like I was gonna say like an STI or an Evo, but you can get like the older WRXs for probably around $5,000. So I think that's still pretty valid. You can get like a Bug Eye, or if you're lucky, even like a Blob Eye, like 2004 to like maybe 2007 range, somewhere around there. You can find those for under $5,000. I know for a fact because like some of my friends have bought them. So that would be my second choice. The old WRXs, and if you're lucky, the STI. Let me see. I'm trying to think, man. This is tough. This is what happens when you don't do your homework.
I'm a car guy. I just don't like. This question was not. I didn't even have to think about this.
Well, I'm more.
I understand. I'm not ragging on you. I'm just saying, like, for me, like, this stuff is what I think about, like, when I go to sleep at night. I don't know. It's car things, you know. But anyhow, go ahead. You have anything else, or you want me to take over for a little bit?
I think that's it. When we spoke about cars under $5,000, I had a couple of good options. I already mentioned it, but the S2000. Under $5,000.
Yeah, I don't think you can buy an S2000 for $5,000. No, you can't. Amelis beat the crap. I would say maybe we could do this again one day.
We should do
this again one day, and we'll do a $10,000 budget, right? But so I think the reason $5,000 is super important, especially now, is there's so many people that are itching to get either a second car or a project car or just get out and build something. And they, you know, $5,000 to some people is a good chunk of change. It takes them a little bit to save. But for a lot of people, it's something either they have, they can, you know, obtain or save in a reasonably short period of time, whether it be a year or under. I think that for $5,000, I think that there are some buys out there that you can get. And I think that by coming to $5,000, we're really putting this conversation in for the guys that have some money saved up. Like for me, I just want to go play around. Maybe I drop $5,000 on a car that I found it to be a good deal. Go out, play with it, and not really think too much of it. For a guy that maybe has his main car and now is going to save for a year and come up with $5,000, now I think what's interesting about that is like that may be like, you know, he saved for it, but what ends up happening is it's an affordable, like he can save that. You know what I mean? You can work doing a lot of different jobs and still over a year, you know, piece together $5,000 if you want it. You know what I mean? So that's $5,000. So do you have any other cards that you want to go through, or do you want me to go through my, I don't know if you want to go back and forth.
I mean, eventually we could go back and forth. If I think of two more after this one, then I'll be like, I thought about this one too, unless you already covered it. But I have one more, that is the 350Z. Mm-hmm. So the 350Z, you can actually, It used to be like you would only find like really beat to crap ones for like $5,000, like really, really destroyed. But they're actually starting to be in slightly better condition, not as beat up, because they're getting older and older and older. So you can actually find them for like maybe it's somewhere like 100,000, 120,000 miles for $5,000 or less. And I've seen them go for that much. And like I know people that have been able to buy them for that. So. Right. 350Z is another one that I would put on the list for that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a solid pick. You got anything else?
Yeah, I know you would think that. No, that's it off the top of my head. I have to think. Some of these cars that I have in my head are like I wouldn't necessarily consider them cars for Time Attack. Or road racing. I think they would be more like drift cars.
Okay.
But that's not to say they couldn't be applied to both. So let's get into what you have now, and then we'll come back to the other two cars that I was thinking about. Or I could save them for when we go into drifting. And then we'll see if I come up with a couple other things.
Okay.
But
I'm gonna go through. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go through my entire list, but. Here's what I'm going to say. I have six, so I kind of broke the rules a little bit. But I'll explain why I have six versus five when we get there. First thing is, I agree with you. I think one of the best value for somebody that's looking to learn to start tracking their car, learning to hit the autocross events, whatever it is a Miata. I think that, you know, that you have the 50-50 weight distribution. I think that you have very cheap, affordable parts that are at your disposal.
Definitely.
I think that you have a lot of options for aftermarket tuning parts that range from affordable and usable to high-end and super tuned. So I think the Miata has a great platform for getting going and not spending a bunch of money. Now, you referenced $1,000 and $2,000, but I'll even up the ante and say that if you have $5,000, and we're talking about $5,000 on a car, or even $4,000 on a car, to leave yourself with a little bit of extra money, that you can go find one that's fairly not beat to crap, you know?
Well, you can actually find them. What was it? I think the last one I had 60,000 miles on it. I paid $2,500 right. for it, and it ran great. Everything was like completely solid. So, you know, if you're talking about spending $4,000 on a Miata, granted the price has kind of gone up,
which is
weird with everything going on that the price on them are going up. But yeah, for $4,000, you can find like a really clean, low mileage one, which I think is a little bit expensive, but still, like, there's a lot to work with there, you know? Or, you know, depending on the route you're going, like, you can either, I mean, I personally wouldn't buy somebody else's project car, but you can buy one that somebody already put a lot of the work into, now they're selling cheaper with, like, a full turbo kit or engine swap or whatever they did into the car, brake upgrades, all of that stuff, you know?
So I think you know, right on the top of my list is definitely the Miata. I'm going to hit the cars that you already said, because I think there's some duplication here, right? I think that for WRX is a really cool car to pick up for an affordable price tag. And I agree with Bug Eyes are getting tougher to find, but they're out there. And when I say WRX, I'm even going to go one step further and say that you may even find a really cool Impreza RS of the same model, and you're going to have a lot of capability to tune that car, and the all-wheel drive system is really very good. So you may find some really good deals in that early Subaru range.
Yeah, that's actually a good one that you just mentioned. I completely forgot about that. What is it? What year was that? Was it like 99?
Well, you're thinking of like that RS, like that. But I'm thinking of just like, even if you get into the Bug Eye years, and even, you know, when blob eye years, like
like 05, 06.
Right. So when you get into those areas, like, they're, you know, those Imprezas and base Imprezas, you know, they're not bad little cars to get out there. And what's interesting about the Miata and this, and the car, if you get like a non-turbo Impreza, is these cars can really, once you get to suspension and tires and all that stuff figured out, these cars can be driven almost flat out. You know, you could put your foot down to the floor and drive these cars as hard as you possibly can. So I think that that's a really interesting
piece. And still drive home from the track.
Hopefully, yeah.
Like, if you drove to and from, well.
Right. That's the goal. So I think there's some early WRXs that are completely obtainable. I don't believe that you're going to find an STI that's not beat to ever living crap for $5,000. But I'm not saying the deals don't exist.
Yeah, or had some type of...
You know, listen, and...
Yeah, they definitely exist, but it's like, it's one of those unicorn things. Like, you got to really, really be holding out, or just really, really be lucky to find someone that's selling one. And then also take into consideration that for that price, you're definitely not going to be spending, or it's, you know, chances are it's not going to be in as good condition as if you spent maybe like double the price on it. You could probably find a much better deal, much better condition for,
you know, and the other thing is too, is that what we are excluding is the salvage title buys. We're not excluding cars that can't be easily registered. And you know, I know some states are going to say, oh, well, we can register, but not a lot of them can. So we're not talking about, I got a budget deal through Copart. We're not talking about a budget deal through an insurance auction or anything like that. These are cars that have clean titles.
All right, let's see.
Yes, obviously, 350Z is definitely my next pick. Whether you're drifting or you're learning to autocross with time attack, and granted, there are some limitations when you get into the rear wheel drive area for some of these, but they're still, I mean, having a rear wheel drive car in a lot of situations can be an awesome platform. And the 350Z is super affordable now. You can find ones that have high mileage and but in pretty solid conditions. You know, the 350Z is a car that's, you know, I'm not talking about engine wise, but it's, you know, around the car, bolt on wise, part wise, pretty easy to navigate and work on. Again, I'm not talking about engine wise. I know that the VQ stuff, you know, it can be hit or miss in some fashions with that stuff. But, you know, suspension is not a big deal. The pretty car is pretty easy to take. There's a lot of aftermarket support for it. Additionally, the car is, you know, pretty quick for in its stock trim, even if it's a DE or, you know, rev up or, you know, high rev, whatever it is. So the 350Z is a solid platform. You have aluminum almost everything. I mean, there's a lot of value in even a base 350Z because, I mean, look, comes with a carbon fiber drive shaft. These are cars that, you know, base. And then if you're lucky to find a high mileage track car that has the Brembos on it, I mean, man, you start really putting some value into where that base is starting. You know what I mean? And a lot of those cars have stiffer suspensions. And the cool thing about, you know, 350Zs is let's even say you buy a base model. You know, one, you can find those Brembos. You know, somebody took off their car, $500, $600, $700, you know, full set front and rears. That's the first thing, you know, with rotors and whatever it may be. Second thing is, you know, look, you buy one of those open diff cars, you yank that pumpkin out, weld it together, and boom, your welded diff now is really applying 50-50 power down to both wheels, and it didn't cost you anything except, you know, even if you don't know how to weld, $100 to have somebody weld the spider gears up. So I think 350Z is a solid option. So now let's go into again, these are not in order, so don't haunt me for saying one's higher than the other. I'm not rating them in any way. Let's see.
Right.
Now it comes to my 5 and 6 one. Like when I said I had two, here's where I get stuck. So I want to say Civic is a really solid option. And 5 years ago, Civic was still a really solid option. But,
you know, I was actually thinking about that earlier. Yeah. But I think I got a little bit too caught up in the whole rear-wheel drive thing. Because literally all the options I had were rear wheel drive, but I completely forgot about the Civic. So
I think Civic is a solid option, and if you can find one, it's still a good option. And you know, you're gonna have a lot of people that in that ballpark, they're gonna be saying things like really older, high mileage TSXs and stuff like that. Yes, all true. There's a lot of Honda platforms you can probably make the case could slide into that thing, but. You know, some of the Honda stuff is going to be either a little bit out of the price range because they have good resale values, or it's going to be into one of those things where you just can't find one that's clean or they're beat to crap, right? So,
well, yeah, I think that's pretty valid. I would say roughly, I don't have anything in front of me. Like, I would say roughly, you can probably find. I mean. There's like street tax on it, you know, like they're popular cars. So the prices are ridiculously high for them right now for what you're getting for the car. But you can probably find, I want to say, decent condition ones. If you find a stock one, that's a unicorn in itself. Look, I don't think you can find a stock one. I'm talking like early 90s all the way up to maybe like
2000.
Early 2000s, I would say. What's the one after the EP3? Is that like the FA 5 or,
you know,
6?
I don't know. I think the car, once you get over 01, really started to fall into a weird look. And so anyhow, that's my thing. But But so Civic, I would say, if you could find a clean one, I think that there's still so much aftermarket support and so much that you could do with a car. And then you got guys like, you know, James Houghton and Chris Boersma that have been, you know, running these cars, campaigning and doing really just amazing things with the platform. And granted, they're nowhere near where that platform was, but you could see how they evolved that platform over time. So here's right. where...
That's another valid yeah. point, or another valid car, the Integra.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm lumping that in with the Civic.
It's the same.
Yeah. I'm lumping that stuff in with the Civic and the Honda stuff. I think that this is where I have a tie in this slot, because I was thinking about this. I really think that there needs to be, like, what's that next piece, right? And for 5K, I'll tell you what you can get that I think you can do a lot of good stuff with, and that is that's a GTI. I think you can get a lot of early Mark V, 1.8T, 2.0 turbo cars, and I think that, you know, you have good aftermarket support. They are really cheap, really cheap. And I think that you can have a lot of value with that platform. So I'm going to throw that into the tie between the Civic, because I think that there's some really good value there. And I think that if you're, you know, you can, for $2,500, you can find a 1.8T, you know, later year Mark IV. And,
yeah,
you know, it's got a lot of aftermarket support. You can tune the car. You can get the car. You can get some power out of the car. I know there's going to be a lot of people. Listen, I struggle with Volkswagens myself in the sense that I think that they're not necessarily hard to work on, but they seem to have a lot of idiosyncrasies about specific timing, specific procedures and things like VAGCOM. And then you have things like special tools that you may not have, but they have so much aftermarket support, so much following. There's so much information on forums and in YouTube and stuff like that. I have to lump that right in there with a Civic to give people an alternative if they just can't find any clean Honda products around.
Right.
And then I'm going to say my last one on the list here, it's an E46. I think you can get some incredible, incredible, incredible values on some of the BMW stuff. I'll even say E36, E46.
I swear to you, Scott, I was going to say E36 yeah. next. Now, I don't have much knowledge as far as German cars go. Sure. Like, I've always been into Japanese cars, but I do know hands down that, like, the E36 holds its own mm-hmm. reputation. And I know a lot of guys in my area that are into BMWs and stuff like that. And, like, I've seen countless ones. I've seen what they do with them. And that also was on my list of cars that, like, you can drift it, you can road yeah. race it. So that one's, you know, there's a lot of aftermarket support in that.
Yeah,
so
I think both generations, you know, of that 3 Series are really, really good options. And, you know, look, I mean, every car is going to have a little thing to it, right? And I think that E46s are kind of no different. E46s have that issue where the actual, like, you have to around the strut towers and stuff like that. You have to actually weld in reinforcements, and a lot of them start to separate, I think, from the subframe. So there's a whole bunch of stuff there that you need to be cautious with when you're buying some of these cars used. But with that, if you're mechanically inclined, if you're able to, you know, drop a subframe and get in there, and they actually sell, I forget who does, but if they actually sell these, like, specially cut pieces to reinforce the strut towers, you can go in there, yeah. put those things in there, you know, weld them up, and you could really do some great things with those cars. So I think that every one of those cars you can get for 5K or under. I think that there is a lot of value in both all those platforms, and I think they're on the top of my list. So if you have any other thoughts out there about other cars, make sure you comment below. I'm really interested to see some of these point of views, you know?
So I feel obligated to mention yeah. this one. I don't know its performance capabilities as far as road racing okay. goes. Like I said, it's rear wheel drive. I had drifting in mind when we were, I had General Motorsport in mind. So I thought about this car and I was like, you know, there are so many things people do to these cars.
The part where you said you feel obligated.
Yeah, I feel obligated to mention this car just because, you know, when we had the discussion of what we were going to do on the podcast, I was like, all right, motorsport, first instinct was rear wheel drive. You can still find these cars stock if you look really hard. But you can also find a lot of aftermarket parts and, you know, the engine swaps for it are just, they're awesome. For the price range, you can do a lot of stuff. You can get a lot of power out of these cars. That is the 240SX. I'm talking S13, S14. Both of them, you can get, you can get a bone stock one for maybe like $2,500, $3,000, somewhere around there, which is kind of expensive because back when I started driving, I started looking for them, they were only going for like $1,200 or $1,300 or something like that. But I think for around $5,000, you can find them with SR20s in them. Maybe even less, maybe around like $4,000, you can find them with full SR20 swaps, just already bolted in, ready to go. You might need to do some stuff because, you know, for $4,000, chances are people just kind of jerry-rig stuff in there. But I think the 240 deserves an honor, like a good little honorable mention there, because there is a lot of aftermarket stuff you can do. But you tell me, Scott, I don't see that as really a road racing car. I don't see that going on the track for like time attack or anything like that. There's people for like drifting. But
there's people that road race those cars and stuff like that. The part I disagree with you on is I don't think you can find one. You know, there's kind of what they call the 240 tax, right? Like, I don't believe that you can find one tax. It's real. I mean, the value of those cars has really skyrocketed for what they are. Unfortunately, I think $5,000 is kind of where you need to, you know, yes, for $3,500, you could find one. It's beat to crap, whatever. But I think if you're really serious about trying to find a 240 that's even remotely clean, even and like, I don't know where you would go to find a stock 240. I'm sure people will have sources, but I don't know where you go for them. But let's say you could find one. I think you have to be prepared in today's day and age to spend up to $5,000 to get one. So I guess you could throw it on the list, and yes, it can work. But the cars that you're going to find I've seen them before. I know what you're talking about. There are unicorns out there that exist where somebody was starting an SR swap and it's been years and now the car's sitting and, you know, you go in with $5,000 and but those cars are usually a massive mess of problems and nightmares, you know?
Well, I do get what you're saying on that, and I totally agree with you. There are those like really beat to crap ones, and there is the drift tax on it now, where it's like people know what they can do with that car, and it's like, oh, like I want to buy that now because of all the different things I can do. It's like the Miata. The price on the Miata is going up dramatically. Even like the Hondas, GTIs, a lot of these cars.
Yeah.
Inevitably, once the price goes down, people are going to start buying them because they can afford them and seeing what they can do and the type of performance, and the price is just going to start going up and up and up. So we could even do this a year from now. We'd do the exact same thing, and some of these cars might not even be allowed to be on the list anymore because now that they've gone up to past $5,000. But
maybe.
But I still think that the 240, you can find some decent ones for the $3,500 range, somewhere around there. The garage I'm renting now, my neighbor's garage, there was actually a kid in there. He picked one up for, I think it was like $4,500, full SR20 swap, and like the entire thing was good. Like the guy actually knew what he was doing when he put it in. Granted, that could have been like a unicorn thing, but I also do know some people that they have picked up 240s recently for maybe $1,000, $2,000. I also know people that have owned them for a while and have contemplated selling them for like $1,500, $2,000, completely bone stock, because, like, you know, the family cars or whatever. So, at least in my area, I think they're still pretty easy to find. But
you know, it's hard because there's always going to be the unicorn case, right? And you know, a good, for instance, I can think about it. My buddy just picked up like 3 weeks ago, just picked up somebody's stripped Evo shell. Right, it was a 2003 Evo shell, so it's an Evo 8, And, you know, the car was kind of gutted. I mean, it had interior, although it was pretty beat to crap. But what's interesting about my buddy is that he happens to have a lot of spare parts laying around. So, you know, for him, it's kind of like, oh, great. Now I can take all these parts and make a car. Yeah. But to me, that doesn't knock. It doesn't check the box of the definition of cars you get for under 5K. Because, yes, he did get the car 5K.
But had he not had those parts laying on the side, he would have spent all that money
buying the parts to build the entire car. Yeah.
You know, so.
Right.
So, yeah. And
anybody that knows that car well knows that, like, you can, if you're looking for, like, it seems to always be the case when you're looking for a T case because you need one, you just seem, those transfer cases just seem to be a boatload of money when you need a good one. So. I always found like, and that was, yo, that was my thing. Like back in my Evo and DSM days, like my big thing was when you had the opportunity, like when you, even if I didn't have any money, if parts came around that like you were just cheap, you picked them up. I used to hoard them. Oh yeah. You know why? Cause here's my thing. My thing was even if I didn't like at one time, like for, especially like my DSM, like I ended up having three GSX transmissions, which were like, you know, good money for a tranny. And you know, I had probably three or four transfer cases. I had a couple rear ends. I had a boatload of axles because I used to break those here and there. And so like I used to, and then I had a boatload of other parts. But the point was, the funny thing about it is I used to wait till like, you know, till somebody was in a pinch or parting out a car, or they just had something they wanted to get rid of. And then, you know, that's when the good deal came up. That's when you buy. You sit on it, and then it's funny because then whether you need that transmission or not, you'll get to a point where, like, you know, somebody does need them, and then that tranny's worth $800-900 at the time.
And you only spent maybe, how much would you be able to get it for?
I mean, I've had deals all over the place. I mean, I remember picking up DSM trannies. Like, I picked up a GSX tranny one time for $400. I drove to New Jersey, picked it up. You know, drove back. I mean, there's always the chance that you have, you know, you buy a part that's maybe not awesome, so you do your best inspection. But you know, I picked up a tranny for $400. I picked up. I remember I went to this place and I drove all the way to Southern Jersey once to pick up some stuff, and I ended up picking up. Like I went there and the guy had like five DSMs laying around all in pieces, and he had just put a car together and he was going to junk some stuff. So, like, I ended up picking up, like, a couple transfer cases, and I just went nuts. Like, I would take whatever I could. But, I mean, the truth is, like, when I was in college, I mean, I made a lot of money to build my car with by flipping car parts and doing work for people. And, you know, that's when I think I really like to work on that stuff because it was like, for me, it almost felt like I was stealing, you know, like.
because you were getting these sick deals and you were finding these opportunities and now you were able to profit off of them because you already knew. You knew that there was a market for it. You knew that it was hard to find firsthand because you couldn't find it yourself. I totally relate to that.
Or even if they weren't hard to find at the time.
Hard to find a good deal.
Like just knowing that you would have them. You'd have them, and then when somebody needed them, it would be a real easy thing for you to sell. So, so I think that was interesting. It felt stealing. Like it also felt like stealing. I started to know DSMs. I mean, I knew DSMs so well that there wasn't too many problems on that car that I couldn't just automatically figure out pretty quickly. So, and I had a lot of extra parts. So to change out parts, even when I wasn't exactly sure. But I narrowed it down. Wasn't hard. I just walked over to one of the bins and picked up what I needed. And so it got to a point where even like helping people fix their cars,
you already knew because you had that firsthand knowledge of working on your own to be like, oh, okay, like check this out, or it's probably this, or you know. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's one of those things. But anyhow. So we digress,
those
are my list. Do you have any car thoughts?
Yeah, being that we were just talking about them, what about the GSX? Those you can probably find for around $4,000 or $5,000.
So here's the thing. My thing is, I believe you can if you're willing to travel. And if you had asked me 4 or 5 years ago that would have been one of my number one cars on the list if you had the nerve to keep the thing running. but the problem is that they've become, you know, every car goes through a cycle, right? And I think that you'll see, and I think it's happening to the 350Z right now. I think that in, you know, five or six years, I think the 350Zs, any of the clean ones, yeah, and I think the ones that they're survived are going to be having some value, and then, you know, we're going to go back in the same way that now if you're looking for a really clean, like 280Z or whatever it may be.
There's going to be a lot of money.
You know, or 240 Datsun. Yeah, you got to be prepared to spend some money. The DSMs are the same thing, you know? And I think you have a handful of cars. For example, like, I regret not buying an MR2 at the time. MR2 pricing dropped really, really down there. And I always kind of wanted a turbo MR2. And that car is climbing in value. Like, you used to be able to get, find them for like $3,000-$4,000. And now if you really want to get one that's like decent, you have to be prepared to spend, $7,000-$8,000. That's fair. I also think the same thing, that's kind of a tough thing, but, you know, there's definitely a few cars that are like that. S2000s, like, if you went back a few years ago, a lot of those cars, you could find them for $10,000, like, almost all day long.
Yeah.
You know, $10,000-$12,000. But now, values of S2000s really climbed.
Somewhere around there. But the good thing about those cars is, though, I think they're still... And I don't know why it's like this. You know, I don't know if it's because, you know, certain cars, they got so cheap, everybody bought them, and now all of them are modified, and now you can't find a stock one anymore. Like, the 240 went through that cycle. The Miata has gone through that cycle. It's still going through that cycle. The Civic, Hondas, all of them have gone through that cycle. You know, I'm sure you could still find stock ones, just not in good condition with the Civic.
But the Civics are a great example, though, just like you said. But now all of a sudden, they're coming back around, that there's so few of them now that are in really good condition. Now, if you want to go out and really buy a Civic, you have to search for it. I mean, to find a good condition Civic, clean Civic, like, not molested Civic, you got to search for it, and then you got to be prepared to spend some money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then be worried about parking it on the street. But that's a different story. The point I was getting to is the S2000, you can actually still find them bone stock, you know? I think it's one of those cars that, although there is a very good aftermarket part of it, there's also still a lot of really good condition, low mileage stock ones. And I don't know if it's because their price point was so high, so, you know, the people that bought them didn't really beat on them or race them or whatever. But I think that's one of those cars where you're still able to find bone stock, really good condition. I know firsthand Miatas are hard to find in that condition. To get a good condition Miata, you have to either, one, do a couple of things to make it in good condition, or spend upwards of like the $3,500, $4,000 range or something like that.
I think that the S2000 kind of fell into the same slot as, let's say, a lot of, you know, C5 Corvettes and stuff like that. And that is, you had somebody that was a little bit older that had some money.
And they wanted like a nice little sports car or something to drive around. They bought it new, and now they got rid of it or traded it in, or they're trying to sell it now because, like, they don't want it anymore. They don't drive it as much or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're gonna have a lot of those cars where, you know, they bought them new and then they put them in their garage and they took good care of them and they drove them once a week or took it out on Sunday and they didn't drive it in the winter weathers, and that was like their Sunday car, their toy, and then all of a sudden, you know, now it's gotten really old or whatever it may be, and they've decided, all right, it's time to move on, whether they're getting another one or they're older. And because of that, deals still pop up. And if you're lucky enough and in the right time, a lot of times, like, I know somebody that only 2 years ago, they got an S2000 with 110,000 miles on it. It had 110,000 miles on it, but it was garage kept. The top was still in mint condition. Like, the car was really in great shape, service maintained and everything, with records right from Honda. Nice. And they got the car for $8,000.
That's awesome.
So Now, here's the thing. They bought it from a gentleman who was probably 70 years old that bought the car, you know, whatever it was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years before that. And he bought the car, I think, used, you know, one of those lots with like 30,000 miles on it. And he's had it for this whole time. And now he's in a place where he can't really
enjoy it,
you know, drive a sports car. Well, you know, it's too low for him. It's too hard to get in. He doesn't want to mess with it. So the guy goes out, you know, whether he has a BMW or whatever he has, and there's no point for him to have this Honda anymore. And he's honestly, you know, whether he's looking at book values or if he's, you know, he thinks $8,000 is a good price for him based off of what he thinks it owes him. You know, they put the car up for sale, and before they realize that, oh, wait, I can get some more money for this car, somebody swoops in, throws the $8K in their face and takes the car. And you know what I mean? Like, those deals happen. They happen all the time. So, you know, you got to be – my friend used to buy and sell cars like as a hobby kind of thing. And I'll never forget it. He had the biggest stones I've ever seen in my life. He had literally – you know, you talk about people that have things printed. He literally would – at night, he would take like sheets of paper and he cut them up into these little squares, right? And he would get these little squares, and he, on every single one of them, he would handwrite a message that says, I really love your car. If you're interested in selling, please call me. And he put his cell phone number. And he would literally go through parking lots and put them under windshield wipers. And he must have did – I mean, he would do hundreds of cars like a week. And but here's the thing. It was a numbers game. He'd do hundreds of cars a week, and then what ended up happening is every week he'd get one or two cars or one or two people that would pop up and say – yeah, like, you know, what do you want to do? And he'd get this great deal on a car because they were never looking to sell. So they never had any exposure to what the pricing was supposed to be. So when he would come in and be like, you know, offer $3,500, knowing that that car really could sell for $5,500.
Yeah.
And they were excited to get $3,500 in cash without having to take it to their mechanic or any jokes or games. He'd sell, he'd pick up these cars that he always had. And then he would turn around and he literally would flip them the next week, make $1,000 car, $800. And he wasn't picky. He wouldn't hold out for top dollar, but he would also make sure that he cleared, you know, a good chunk of change without really having to do anything.
Yeah, all he had to do was buy the car.
So
that's pretty awesome.
So, and then, you know,
that's a really
it was honestly, he was really very good at it. And then at one time he got to a point where he actually bought, he rented a shop, like, you know, just for himself, because he was getting to the point where at all times he had 5, 6, 7 cars. And he just, you know, it was just enough of a space where he can pack them in there. And he had one little slot where he can, like, work on some stuff and stuff like that. But I always thought that it was really smart of him because he was just kind of, like, he was preying on the fact that people wouldn't, you know, like, they're not lazy, but, like, they wouldn't want to do any effort or work. That, and if you bought them a solid deal, they'd just take it.
What he did was he marketed on the people that contemplate, maybe I should sell it. And by leaving the notes, it was like, you know, they were already contemplating this, but they never actually took that step to actually post it up to sell. So now he's profiting off of their consideration of selling it and actually, I don't know, not really persuading them, but, you know, making some type of deal with them to where they're like, all right, yeah, like, I would be down to sell this car for X amount of money. Right. So sure, here, like, take it off my hands, you know. Almost coming in as kind of like a guardian angel, like, they had no work to do, and he got a car, they got money, they both got what they wanted, but now he's able to profit off of it and flip that car because he actually knows what the value of that car would be, you know? Yeah. My question to you, though, if you know this, or if you don't, then I guess your question to him, if you still talk to him or whatever, would be, you know, how does he keep track of what cars he left a note on or whatever? Like, did he just straight up ask him? Like,
He doesn't. He just leaves notes.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of them. I mean, I remember he used to just leave them under, I mean, hundreds of cars a week. Hundreds of cars a week. I mean, I always said to him, like, why don't you just have this printed? And he used to say, no, there's no point. Everybody wants to see, like, that you had a handwritten note. Like, you saw their car.
That's super valid. If you have a bunch of printed ones, they'll almost just be like,
it looks like it's a business.
It looks like it's a business, yeah. So.
Right. Yeah, so for him, it was kind of like, you know, when he hand-wrote them, it looked like, you know, he stopped and ripped a piece of paper and like, you know, basically said, oh, okay, like, I like your car, yeah. You know? He never kept track because he did so many cars. It would just be like one of those things, like when they would call, he would be like, they'd be like, oh, you saw a car. He'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, like, or whatever. I remember he'd ask questions, or he'd be like, I think he would just say, do you mind if I come see it? You know what I mean? And then he would go out there and kind of just make the deal. All right, so there's no need for this mic anymore because audio's jacked.
So some technical difficulties have just...
We just lost the mic, so now we're just going off the phone. Sucks. Anyways,
so what I was saying before we ran into some audio issues was just that, you know, and as far as the Miata stuff goes, like, some of that stuff has been increasing as well, like the price and stuff like that, but... in reference to like your buddy that used to like flip the cars and stuff like that, I actually used to, and like what you used to do with your Eclipse and all the DSM stuff. I used to flip hard tops, like Miata hard tops. I think I bought maybe like 3 of them for stupid cheap. Like right now, current price on them, you can't find them cheaper than $1,200. I used to buy them for like $500-$600, and like people would post them up like $600. I'd be like, yo, I will come right now. $500, $400, and pick one up, and then I would be able to sell them for like $800-$900 without doing anything to them. Just literally, just drive there with my car, put my convertible top down, clip on the hard top, go home, take a picture of it, post it up for sale, make like $400-$500 per hard top.
If you can find them, it's a great hustle, that's for sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was pretty much it. That was just what I was getting to on that. You want to close this out, Scott?
I think so. Yeah. So that's the end of Wheel Wednesday. We probably took up a lot of time. hopefully we didn't go too far off topic. But that's just how it works sometimes.
We kind of drifted off into no pun intended. But we kind of drifted off into completely other topics. But if you guys. Got this far and you're seeing this, put down below.
There's nobody that got this far. If you got this far,
I think
comment you got this far down below.
What? There should be a prize if they got this far.
This is right. There's a prize. If you get to this point, Nick's gonna send you a prize.
There you go. Comment down below if you got this far.
I'll send you a Miata hard top. So I think that's it for this one. For more info on the podcast, head over to koenigwheels.com/podcast. Please make sure you subscribe. It means a lot to us, and we're trying to continue to bring you content. Look out for Friday. There hopefully will be another video up on our YouTube page. And if you're watching this, we go live at 3 p.m. Eastern on Instagram every week. So hopefully we'll be doing that again today. So, till next Wednesday, we will catch you later. Take care.
Peace.